Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Fellow Portlanders, from high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, readying a vast swath of happenings so that you might be more educated. Those happenings include, but are not limited to, the following.
The landscaper wore a wire when he asked Terry Harmon for $10,000 to kill her husband. Father and son ranchers have been arraigned on federal charges alleging they set 8 forest fires on federal land. And Lindsay Lohan has been sentenced to 90 days in jail.
It's a good day to be alive, Don Taylor. It's a day in which the grass smells a little bit greener, the air smells a little bit crisper, and the laughter of children fills the air. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. This is Legion of News.
I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, July 7th, 2010. We have more details about the landscaper who said Kyron Horman's stepmother offered to pay him to kill her husband. 6 or 7 months ago, at the urging of police, it turns out he went back to Terry Moulton Horman wearing a wire. He was accompanied by an undercover officer, and on the recorded conversation, he asked for $10,000, saying otherwise he would go to the police with her murder-for-hire plot. Authorities deemed the landscaper's account credible and serious, and they shared it with Kyron's father, Kane Horman, the same afternoon as the undercover operation took place. She's the last person known to have seen Kyron, a second grader at Skyline School, before he disappeared on June 4th. Large-scale searches have found no sign of the boy. The landscaper's account prompted Kane Horman to leave his wife and take their 19-month-old daughter with him.
I wonder, on a scale of 1 to, like, 5, how surprising he found it when they were telling him, hey, by the way, and so your wife was going to have you killed. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it, but it's just, well, let me back up. I'm not trying to make light of the fact that their kid vanished. I'm making all kinds of light of the whole landscaper killing thing. Because, you know, it's been a trying few weeks for that guy anyway. And he probably did not anticipate that he would be dealing with the awful scenario of his child being abducted. That being said, he probably then further did not anticipate that he would be told his wife was going to have him killed. And then even if he had anticipated that, he probably wouldn't have imagined that it was the landscaper that she was trying to have. I mean, allegedly, that she was trying to have do the deed. And it's been an odd year for him. We should buy him a fruit basket.
And, you know, it does seem unlikely that the two incidents are unconnected. And yet, if they are, how terrible and how terrible for him, how kind of awesome for those of us watch it. I mean, it's you know, it's terrible that he has to go through this thing with his kid, but it's like, unfortunately, coincidentally, it happened 2 days after his wife had, like, tried to kill him.
Well, here's my thing, and I this is maybe the wrong forum to be. Well, there's no right forum for this, and so therefore there is no wrong forum. I don't understand. I'm not disagreeing, but I don't understand exactly how the two could be related. In other words, I'm trying to connect those dots, but I don't really unless she was just, this is just my, I'm just saying, I'm just talking out loud now. I'm just saying, this is just me speaking. Unless she was just trying to start anew as a brand new woman, and she thought, you know, this family's really, really like just a big ankle bracelet around me. I just can't get rid of them. They're like a LoJack. Maybe if I could somehow be free of my family entanglements. But it seems like if that was the case, she could just, you know, parents in this country got no problem just ditching their family and taking off.
You know, when Kyron went missing, he was wearing a CSI t-shirt.
Yes.
Maybe he uncovered the plot.
Maybe he was on to, Mom, look, I mean, he's walking around the room in a trench coat and a stubby cigar. So, no, I got one more thing, Mom. No, the thing that keeps bothering me is, all right. Have we heard from the dad since all of this went down?
All that's been happening is that Karen's father and Desiree Young, the mother of Karen, the husband, the guy's first wife, have been holding press conferences asking the stepmother to
come clean. Say what it is you know. When did you know it, and what is it you know? Yeah. Also, yesterday, and I'm trying to remember exactly where this was. It may have been on Powell somewhere. I forget. I saw a billboard, and it was in I guess it kind of jumped out at me because it was in Spanish, which is fine. It just didn't seem to make any sense, actually, because they're not a Spanish-speaking family, right? And you said that they lived in what we might refer to as a very white part of white is such a relative term in Portland. It's not like in some other cities when you say, well, there's a really white part of town and then there's a part of town not so white. In Portland, it's all just sort of varying shade. It's like a swatch collection of white. They lived in a ivory white part of town as opposed to an eggshell white part of town. But so there's a Spanish language billboard saying, "Have you seen Kyron and whatever?" But then. This is what makes me a horrible person. I immediately wondered if the organization that had put up the billboard saying, "Have you seen Kyron?" like regretted their purchase. If they thought, we should have waited for something that obviously wasn't an inside job. Allegedly.
Well, I mean, the kid is still missing, though.
Well, yes.
Someone could have seen something.
I know. And
someone who speaks Spanish.
And I'm not. I suppose that's true. And I'm not trying to. I really am not trying to be Johnny Buzzkill about this. All kidding aside. I mean, you know, if the kid is still alive and still out there somewhere, I mean, obviously you want him to come back home, and that goes without saying. The other thing, the misery of it, though, in some weird way, is almost that, like that Austrian guy, Fritz the Nutcase. It was the guy in Austria that had his family in a dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
You know I'm talking about Fritz Lieber or Fritz Wallace, something or other. But, you know, that guy, he just had his family locked up in in this underground chasm for like 40 years. The bad thing about that, apart from the obvious, is that then every time a kid is missing, the family says to themselves, well, you know, they're always, or the girl in California, they found her for like 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, well, it could happen. And, you know, and it could, you know, but I could also be St. Jerome. It's not likely. I'm not St. Jerome. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Father and son ranchers from Grants Pass, Oregon, described by their friends as the salt of the earth, have been arraigned on federal charges alleging they set at least 8 range fires on federal lands going back to the 1980s.
What you're saying is that being salt of the earth, they assaulted the earth.
Dwight Hammond Jr., 68, and his son Stephen Hammond, 41, appeared in U.S. District Court in Eugene on Tuesday to face a 19-count federal indictment. Most of the fires they set were under 250 acres, but one in 2006, called the Granddad, was 46,000 acres.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of fire. The indictment alleges the Hammonds were frustrated with how long it took the U.S. Bureau of Land Management to do environmental analyses required before controlled burns, which are done to improve cattle grazing. The indictment also alleges the Hammonds threatened a BLM rangeland manager in Burns named Joe Glasscock that they would put the blame on the biggest of the fires on him if he did not make the problem, quote,
go away. How did I know that's how that sentence ended? Awesome.
Bill Hoyt, a Cottage Grove rancher and president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, said there are no better people in the world than the Hammonds.
Except people who don't start fires, allegedly.
Yeah,
everyone else.
The indictment paints a slightly different picture. It also alleges that in 2001, Steve Hammond was with a group of hunters that fired into a herd of deer, with the bullets passing over the heads of a rival hunting party on federal land leased by the Hammonds for grazing. Then he and his father set fires that moved towards the hunter's camp. It also charges them with setting fires that threatened BLM firefighters who were already fighting a fire.
I don't understand anything in this story. What is the problem with these people? What is up with them?
Well, for starters, they like to fight fires.
Well, okay.
They like to start fires.
All right. Is this sort of a, they're creating the problem so they can solve it kind of a thing? You know, like you got to break eggs to make an omelet. Well, we like to fight fires. There just aren't enough of them.
Well, on the one hand, you can kind of see. I mean, they lease a very large amount. I can't remember. I don't think it's in this story, but they themselves lease a very large amount of federal land to graze their cattle. And they say that they were frustrated with how long it took the BLM to get around to doing the controlled burns that are necessary to renew the land for the cattle to graze. On the other hand, though, they're charged with setting at least 8 fires going back to the 80s, including one that burned 46,000 acres.
Yeah. Now, that seems an excessive way to solve the problem. That's over-solving the problem.
And then you get to the whole threatening the BLM guy and shooting over guys' heads and setting fires that head towards their camp. And,
yeah.
And now they just start to look like, you know, creeps.
Amoral goons.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, don't threaten the guy. Here's the guys like this never learn. You don't threaten the government. You threaten the man. The man will. You try to F the man will F you like until you can't walk anymore. So don't do that.
Well, in the big news today, actress Lindsay Lohan was ordered to serve 90 days in jail for missing alcohol counseling sessions in violation of her probation.
It's so good. If only I had. And I. What do we know exactly when that verdict came down? I wonder if we were on the air. I should have been watching.
I think
news. I should have been checking the news wire. I have failed everyone. I should have had the live breaking sound on that as it happened.
Sadly, she doesn't have to begin serving her sentence until July 20th.
That's crap.
But on the upshot of that, though, is
she's going to prison.
She might run for it. This story could get better.
Now, is she going to an actual Regal prison?
She is, after the judge ruled that she had violated her probation in a 2007 drunken driving conviction, she began sobbing. And she's going to, I'm not sure where she's going to jail. I haven't been able to figure that out. But she does, she's sentenced to 90 days in jail. Conventional wisdom is that because she's a female prisoner and this is like her first real jail time other than the 83 minutes she served once before, she will probably only serve about 23 days. And after that, she's supposed to go directly into a rehab program. I do have a little sound here. Her father was Michael Lohan, was on Larry King.
He's a real prize, too.
Yeah.
He's like Father of the Year material.
So here's a little bit from Michael Lohan on the sentence.
I can in the past few weeks.
Oh, that's not it. Okay.
Since I was here
last. Oh, come on.
This is the only time I've been
in. Michael Lohan seems to have become a different man.
Here we go.
What's your reaction to the sentence?
Dismay, but at the same time, a little satisfaction that she's going to a rehab. But the last thing in the world I wanted was for my daughter to go to jail.
You think 90 days was harsh?
Mr. King.
Call Larry.
Larry, any time in jail is harsh. Especially for a young lady like Lindsay.
Call me Larry.
I've been there myself, and I know jail didn't do anything for me with my addictions.
Well, that's good. Do you want to go to Elaine's afterward? Get a toddy?
Yeah,
I take responsibility for my actions.
Stop it.
I'll turn that down. I'll turn that down so there's no risk of Lindsay bursting into the... she can't be held back. She's insisting on being heard. Well, we'll have all that later on.
And of course, I'm sitting here talking to the computer. Stop it! Like, it will just... You know, pay attention to that. Lindsay was ordered not to drink alcohol, and an electronic bracelet was fitted on her leg after she had missed counseling sessions and had not shown up for some probation hearings. The Scram bracelet measured an alcohol level of 0.03% on midnight on June 7th, but reported a zero reading 4 hours later. Revelle said during Tuesday's hearing, the alert would be a bond violation, but not a probation violation. But still, she's still drinking while she's wearing the alcohol bracelet.
And what is the difference between a bond violation? It makes me tired even to ask the question. I probably don't care. A bond violation and a probation violation.
Probation violation, I don't know.
All right. Never mind.
I was about to try to explain it, but I don't think
that. Nobody like text or anything about it. I don't care.
Cheryl Marshall, the director of the Right On program, where Lohan has been attending counseling.
That's fantastic. Please tell me that it's that woman from Glee who does that.
She testified Tuesday morning that Lohan would sometimes call ahead when she was going to miss a weekly session. A report from the program to the judge said Lohan, quote, kept making up creative excuses, unquote, about her absences. Her father was in court for the hearing. The judge denied him a chance to speak, although she did accept a letter from him. Michael Lohan has been calling for the court to order his daughter into alcohol and drug rehab. I have another quote from him on Larry King. Basically illustrating what an excellent role model he has been to her as a child.
Michael Lohan.
I got my first DWI, hit a telephone pole doing 80 miles an hour. I got one in the third to 4 years. That's a harsh sentence. I did my time, I appealed it, and I won my appeal, and I got out. I stayed on probation for 24 months, for 2 years. I was urine tested every single week. I had to go in. I lived up to every one of the mandates put upon me.
isn't it? Wouldn't he have a? Didn't he have a big cocaine problem? Wasn't that his thing?
I think so.
He was like
too,
a big cokehead. Also, when did she go to jail the first time? I don't remember. I keep confusing her with Paris Hilton.
Yeah, I have no. I'm not sure.
All I remember is there was that whole thing where somebody was yelling "fire crotch" at somebody else in front of a club,
well,
and then there was
fisticuffs,
and then somebody went.
2007 was the actual drunk driving conviction.
For Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, and then she was supposed to be going to weekly alcohol counseling sessions, and she hasn't been going to them ever since that. And then every time she has a court appointment, she comes up with reasons not to go to the court
appointments. You know, if I don't go to if I don't go to my shrink when I'm supposed to, they hit me for like, you know, however many dollars, and I get the feeling that they would, you know, that they would probably enact harsher measures at some point. But the never mind. Never, you know, I was just gonna open my mouth and say a bunch of things about Lindsay Lohan and, you know, in jail and celebrities. But I'm just happy that she's getting 90 days. I think I don't want to look a gift sentence in the mouth.
What was great on Larry King, it was Michael Lohan, and then on the other end of the table was Michael Lohan's attorney, who was this woman. So I guess she's an expert on Lohan's going to jail.
She's written a paper.
And sitting between them, Dr. Drew.
Of course. Well, he's, you know, Dr. Drew is one of those guys that I'm just so undecided about him. I don't quite know how I feel about Dr. Drew. On the one hand, you know, he does seem like a guy who just sort of, you know, he just gravitates to wherever a camera might be on somewhere that might project his face into American homes. But he does sort of seem like the real deal.
Yeah.
I got to interview him one time and he did seem very, he seemed very genuine. And maybe, and who knows, maybe that's part of his shtick. I don't know. But
he seems to really care. But honestly, that celebrity rehab show that he had, did you ever watch that at all?
I did. Well, see,
that just seemed so damaging to these people as opposed to being helpful. Really getting these people, these celebrities with these terrible drug addictions, and then putting them all in a fishbowl, is good?
And maybe that's my thing, is that it's not that I think that Dr. Drew is a fraud or something, because I don't. And you're right. He really does. And maybe I'm a patsy, but he does seem to care about people. But that's my thing, is that it's so clear that show just does, like, zero good for anyone. The only good it does is for your career, in the sense that you might be able to get yourself like a low-grade porn film out of it somehow. I mean, if you're Daniel Baldwin, let's say.
Was Rachel Hunter ever one of those people?
Probably.
Because I don't want to say that.
There have been many installments of it now.
Because there have been a lot of ex-supermodels and such.
I don't know. The last one I saw was the one that had, was it the same season that had Daniel Baldwin and Mary Carey?
Yeah.
So that's the last one I saw.
Yeah.
And then I had a pre-existing, when I interviewed Dr. Drew, I had the interview had already been set up because he was promoting Celebrity Rehab, whatever the new season was going to be. And as we got ready to go on, it was maybe half an hour before we got ready to interview. That was the day that they hauled Britney Spears out of her house and stuck her in a padded room. It was awesome. It was like the best.
That timing is brilliant.
It was the best confluence of events ever. I mean, that was just such a glorious day to begin with. I mean, the only day that tops Britney Spears being stuck in the nut house for me was the day that they stuck Paris Hilton in jail and she just started blubbering like a freaking child in the courtroom. And just the waterworks poured forth like she was a crimey Sally doll from the 50s. It was, that may have been the greatest moment of my life, actually.
Well, later on the Rick Emerson show, when we revisit this, I do have audio of Lindsay Lohan, not really blubbering like a baby, but whinily trying to explain herself.
Fantastic. I'm calling on somebody right now to make a porn film of this whole thing, of Lindsay Lohan, Wait, hold on. Don't email about this yet. No. Later on today. Today's high concept topic. We haven't brought back High Concept Wednesday in some time. High Concept Wednesday today will be, what would the porn film of Lindsay Lohan's current situation be called?
Well, perhaps connected to this, perhaps not. But on my PDX-FM show, Ham-Fisted Radio, later today at 4 p.m., my opener before the show is the trailer for Chained Heat.
Really?
So.
I thought about opening the Rick Emerson show today with that, because yesterday we had The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. Today I have something else, but I had toyed with the idea of Chained Heat, so good for you. Also coming up on the Rick Emerson show today, which begins at 1 o'clock, today's installment of Pop Culture Authority asks the question, what is up with tentacle porn? Which is a phrase that I had to say like 100 times this morning before I could do it without laughing.
And that was just a great moment for me, sitting across the table from you.
So you realize you have a job that is not like the jobs that most people have. Also coming up later on the day in the Rick Emerson Show, we'll talk to Aaron Mesh of Willamette Week, and we'll have a listener-submitted top five. Listener Jeff of Tualatin, actually, submitted his top five rock and roll screams. The top five screams in a rock and roll song from listener Jeff of Tualatin. That's coming up later on today, as well as all of the other shenanigans. This is Don Taylor, the Legion of News, News Desk.
Firefighters have come out with their statistics for the 4th of July, as they always do every year. Several days pass after 4th of July, you get to hear how many people hurt themselves. Firefighters responded to fewer fireworks-related calls this year, but still cited 20 people for using illegal fireworks. Portland Fire and Rescue spokesman Lieutenant Alan Oswald said firefighters made contact with 70 people, 20 of whom were cited for illegal fireworks, and 22 of whom received written warnings. Crews responded to 25 reported fires, 19 of which involved fireworks. In 2009, firefighters said 66 fires were reported, and 45 of those. So people set themselves on fire less this year.
Which is sort of a win-lose, because on the one hand, it really is just a lose, because you like to think that, I mean, the only way that that's a win for the rest of us is if they would have earlier, in another scenario, if they would have been setting themselves on fire and then, like, catching somebody else's house on fire as they ran around saying, oh, my God, ow, ow. But now it sort of seems like they're just going to be finding, idiots will find some other way to maim themselves that is less entertaining for the rest of us.
Well, there's still wood chippers and nail guns.
Yes. Yes, there are, Don Taylor.
Investigators said they also confiscated more than $12,500 worth of fireworks, the largest amount seized in 4 years.
I'm surprised it was only 20 people they busted. It seems like it ought to be more than that. I mean, it is sort of shocking that in a town that is, you know, the largest town like Portland, that they only got 20 people. I guess maybe that's they only busted 20 people, because I know that just in my neighborhood alone, I heard things, and these were not just the normal gunshots and screams of of pain. Like in my neighborhood, there was just the things happening all night long that were clearly illegal fireworks going on just outside my window. But I guess they must just figure it's you can't police everywhere.
Well, they did confiscate more fireworks than they seized in the past 4 years.
So that's why the arrests were
so down. Maybe there were fewer arrests because they were just taking stuff away from people.
Well, I suppose. All right. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News, News Desk.
In a story posted on its website this morning, People magazine quotes the unnamed friend of an unnamed friend saying that Tipper Gore has known about the allegations of his being a crazed sex poodle ever since Al Gore learned about them. Last week, Portland police said that the Bureau would reopen and investigate Molly Haggerty's claims that the former vice president sexually assaulted her when she was hired to give him a massage at the Hotel Lucia in October 2006. The news stance came as Molly Haggerty went public, telling the National Enquirer in its latest edition she's demanding a full police investigation. Tipper Gore's friend says, quote, "She has known that massage has been very much a part of Al Gore's health regimen for many, many, many years. She doesn't believe any of the allegations that this woman is making, and they played no role whatsoever in their decision to separate."
I wonder what... Well, I was going to ask what it was like to sort of be a massage therapist in Portland post this whole story. If there's... If this sort of thing... Not that this actually happened, because who knows. But if this sort of thing did happen, because you actually, I think it was you that you were sort of wondering aloud how frequent it is that people sort of look at the massage therapist and go, look, I got an extra fin. A little help or something. And whether that, whether they've sort of had to crack down on that, whether they, what might have just been rebuffed with a, I'm sorry, sir, we don't do that here. Now they get a hold, you got to get up and get your pants on and get out. But was it the Fun Employment Radio listener party? We met a massage therapist that was talking to us about this. Were you there? Were you part of that conversation?
Yeah, I was the one talking to him. Yeah.
I forget the guy's name. He gave me his card and I've forgotten it. But
Andrew.
Andrew, was that his? Well done.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm keeping you around because I can never remember anybody's name. I barely remember my own name most of the time. But we were at the listener party for Fun Employment Radio, which Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler do at funemploymentradio.com. And we had gone there, and there was a listener who came up, and he's like, hey, I heard you talking about the massage therapist. He's like, if you ever need questions answered about massage or anything about the Gore case, he's like, you just let me know, and I can give you the massage therapist perspective. And he gave me the card, and then he told me they do abdominal rubs. Which is bizarre, because that was the thing about the story. It sounded weird when he wanted a rub of his abdomen, which I've never... That's a thing you do to your schnauzer. It's not a thing you do to Al Gore.
Maybe that's why she called him a crazed sex poodle.
See, maybe...
He wanted his belly rubbed.
That actually would... Well, I have no other plausible explanation for that, so maybe. But he said an abdominal rub, which just sounds sort of oogie. It just doesn't...
Can you imagine massaging someone's abdomen? That doesn't sound...
Well, it doesn't sound like it would be pleasant for me either if somebody was doing that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Rick Emerson's a big fan of massage. It's one of the best things in the world. The abdomen rub just sounds weird. It seems like that might have unintended side effects.
Apparently so. Yeah.
Right. Here's Don Taylor.
It is now time for Science News.
Science on the March, brought to you by Legion of News.
Shrimps around the coasts of Britain are getting high on antidepressants. Sea life is being exposed to potentially damaging amounts of chemicals found in the drug Prozac, researchers at the University of Portsmouth in southern England have discovered. In tests, shrimp were exposed to the same levels of fluoxetine as found in British wastewaters. Scientists found that the test shrimps were 5 times more likely to swim toward the light instead of away from it, making the creatures more likely to be eaten by fish or birds. The change in behavior could potentially devastate the shrimp population.
Wait, I'm sorry. You were talking about antidepressants, then you said something about going toward the light.
Yes, they gave shrimp the amount of this chemical that is found in the waters around Britain.
And the chemical is
fluoxetine,
which is what?
Which is Prozac.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they found that the shrimp who were exposed to this amount of Prozac are more likely to swim towards light instead of away from it. Which makes them...
Well, that's kind of cute if it didn't lead to their death.
But it does. Crustaceans are crucial to the food chain, and if the shrimp's natural behavior is being changed because of antidepressant levels in the sea, this could seriously upset the natural balance of the ecosystem, said Dr. Alex Ford.
You gotta think that maybe they're okay with being eaten, though. Maybe sort of, if they're on Prozac, it's just, as the baleen-filled whale comes toward them, the shrimp must just go, hey, what are you going to do?
I'm not scared anymore, strangely enough.
Each meat, it's all the same to me. All right.
I'm happy.
There is. It might be zen with the entire thing.
He also said, it's no surprise that what we get from the pharmacy will also be contaminating the country's waterways. He said that some shrimps were taking on the excreted prescription drugs of entire towns. Prescriptions for antidepressants have risen rapidly in recent years, according to statistics. In 2002, there were 26.3 million antidepressant prescriptions handed out by doctors in England and Wales. Yet the environmental effect of pharmaceuticals in sewage is largely unexplored.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know I'm supposed to care about that, sir, but the story's amusing. I guess I'm supposed to be concerned about the actual events depicted in the story, but I'm just not, and I don't care.
A giant solar-powered plane has taken off in a bid to stay airborne through the night without fuel. The ultralight Solar Impulse, piloted by Swede André Borsberg, spent today circling over Switzerland, climbing slowly to 30,000 feet while topping up its batteries with sunlight through 12,000 tiny cells in its wings and tail. When the sun sets, the prototype was due to fly with power from its batteries, slowly descending during the dark hours to 5,000 feet. The carbon fiber Solar Impulse weighs only 1.6 tons, the same as the average European car. The team behind the 128 million Swiss francs project, that's about $141 million to you and I, was confident that the aircraft, which has a wingspan as long as that of a big airliner, will be able to start soaking up rays immediately.
Is it a real airplane in the sense that, like, you could put a bunch of people on it and take them somewhere? Or is it one of those fake planes where it's made out of balsa wood? And it can't hold anything.
Well,
that doesn't count.
it's very small, for one thing. It weighs about the same as a car, although it does have a wingspan as big as that of an airliner. So it's obviously not a really practical
plane. So it's a glider, basically.
As I said, they want to build a second prototype that will fly the Atlantic and then in 2013 around the world. They're essentially, I think, testing to see if solar power for airplanes, is practical in future years. They also said to save weight and keep the pilot active, the aircraft has no automatic pilot. The plane takes off at just over 32 kilometers an hour and cruises at about 56 kilometers per hour, making it vulnerable to turbulence and headwinds.
You know what they ought to do?
It's not a practical plane.
Here's the thing that they ought to build. I don't know why they don't do this. I don't know why they don't just build the most obvious and probably most widely used commercial application of that is people going from Europe to the United States and back. I mean, that is where most of the, I would say, the bulk of intercontinental air travel, I would guess upward of maybe 40 or 45% of it, is between Europe and the States, especially England and the States. I don't know why they don't just build a channel between, or whatever, you know, I guess it wouldn't be a channel because it's not a channel, right? That's a channel tunnel.
I just love the word channel.
I don't know why they don't build one of those between Europe and the United States. Seriously, how hard can it be? They already built one that's longer.
Are you aware of how long a distance that actually is?
Yeah, but I mean, but this is...
Do you know
this
how long
is
it a, takes, like, ocean liners to the sail modern era.
No,
between?
But, yeah, but you wouldn't be... Okay, but you wouldn't be on an ocean liner and you wouldn't be sailing. You would do the same thing. It would just be like one of those Japanese rocket trains. You put a tunnel in, you put a train in, bam, you're done.
Nothing could go wrong with that plan.
Something could go wrong with everything. Yes, nothing goes wrong with the transportation we have now. What could possibly go wrong with a plane that's powered by the sun?
A rocket train.
Icarus.
In a tunnel under the Atlantic Ocean.
We have, okay, you're saying now, and the thing is, I've read other people, I've read articles by other people where they talk about other variations on the tunnel. Put it this way. We already have a tunnel, right, which is an underground tunnel. It's a tunnel that goes under the under the English Channel. People use it for transportation. We have that. Mm-hmm. We already have those jet trains. I mean, that's what they use for in Japan. So why can't you just build a tunnel that goes from Europe to the States and put one of those trains in it?
You know, we should have one of those tunnels under the Columbia River instead of this ridiculous plan to build a brand new bridge that's going to cost like a gazillion billion dollars.
Yeah, no,
they're talking about. Why don't they just dig under?
It's just
do that.
It's ridiculous. And I just got an email here. Somebody, it was Stephen Levitt who wrote about that, and he's the guy. Stephen Levitt is probably most widely known to folks. Stephen Levitt is the co-author of Freakonomics.
Oh.
And it wasn't in Freakonomics. It was in a follow-up piece he did where he talked about merging the idea of a channel and something, and he did mention a train. So that's where I've got that from. So that is not a thing that I came up with myself. I got that from Stephen Levitt. And he wrote Freakonomics. So there you go, okay. Don Taylor, in your face.
I have been properly schooled.
The thing about traveling is, I think like a lot of people, if you're going to go somewhere, that's fine. I don't enjoy the journey. I am, my wife is constantly yelling at me about this, that I don't enjoy the journey. To me, it's all about the destination. It's a guy thing or whatever, but I don't, the journey, F the journey. I just want to be there. And the thing is, those rocket trains go like, they go like 500 miles an hour or something. So, and plus the thing is, as opposed to being, in the air where there's other traffic or being on the ocean where you're subject to nature and currents and weather and whatever, that is essentially a closed system. It's an isolated environment. And if you were able to go, let's say 500 miles an hour in effectively a straight line without outside interference from the elements of the weather, you could probably make that trip in a third of whatever you make it now.
Okay. I believe you have convinced me.
There you go. So, all right. Together, Stephen Levitt and I are solving all the world's problems. It's more him. I'm really just repeating them. Here's Don Taylor.
That is all of our science news for today.
That's your science on the march right here on Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A psychic octopus in Germany, which appears to have correctly predicted every World Cup game involving the German team so far, has picked Spain over Germany in the semifinal. Paul the Octopus, from the Sea Life Aquarium in the western city of Oberhausen...
I don't think it's a real German name.
...chose a mussel from a jar with a Spanish flag instead of the one with the German flag. The two-year-old cephalopod has become a national celebrity. According to his owners, he has a record of predicting German results. They say Paul chose the winner in nearly 70% of Germany's games during the 2008 European Championship. He correctly predicted all five of the team's previous World Cup games, including a shock defeat by Serbia in the group stages. His prognosis ahead of Wednesday's World Cup semifinal was broadcast live on German TV.
See, and it's all well and good that we read this story and there's some humor value to it and we chuckle, but only I see the looming danger here because those things are evil, man. And they're like crows. They're like the crows of the sea. They're coming for us.
Yeah, squid and octopus are really scary intelligent.
No, they're freakishly smart, and they're going to kill us all. Have you ever watched that? What the hell was that show on Discovery Channel? It was Future Evolution or Freakolution. Now I'm doing the Freakonomics thing. But it was one of those things where they did it. They artificially accelerated, you know, using computer models, the evolutionary patterns of the Earth and what, you know, like what stuff would look like in 100,000 years and a million years. And they found that in 10 million years, I swear to God, this was their conclusion, that in 10 million, which I believe just unhesitatingly, in 10 million years, the giant squid will stride the landscape of this planet. I swear to God, they'll leave the water and they'll just walk around on the land, and they're massive, and they're just going to sort of go and just hurl themselves around the world through, you know, across deserts and through forests, killing all of us.
Oh.
And they're going to be like the size of a skyscraper, too.
I wish I could see that.
Yeah, yeah, well. So there you go. So when we look back, this is going to be like at the end of Battlestar Galactica or something, where you say, "Oh, what a cute robot toy we bought for our child. What could go wrong?" You know, and then you cut to somebody being disemboweled by a Cylon. That's really what's happening here. It's like that. Have you seen that mimic octopus?
Yes.
Oh man, we'll talk about that later on, because I just got another video of that the other day. I'm a big fan of animals that can do freaky things.
That is freaky.
Somebody sent me one of those David Attenborough things where it's like, here's the mimic octopus, you know, and here it is looking like a squid, here it is looking like a fish, here it is looking like Al Pacino, and it's just doing all of these insane things on camera. If you didn't trust David Attenborough, you just figure somebody was screwing with you. Here's Don Taylor.
I believe we have a huge pile of entertainment news.
Fantastic. The Legion of News presents entertainment.
Officials at the Lucky Star Casino in Concho, Oklahoma, have canceled a concert by Yes and Peter Frampton after strong winds caused the stage to collapse Tuesday afternoon. It's a very sound structure. It's capable of handling winds up to 80 miles per hour, said Mark Rogers, Lucky Star Casino Marketing. Six workers were injured, two were taken to the hospital, one worker suffered a broken leg. Others say it's a storm that came out of nowhere. This was a single gust of wind that did this, said a stage worker.
It's almost as if God hates wanky progressive rock that serves no purpose.
It was a single gust of wind, and a minute later, there's not an ounce of wind left, he said. Event officials said 10,000 tickets were sold to Tuesday's concert that was set to start at 8 p.m. The concert will be rescheduled for a later date, but refunds are not being offered. Peter Frampton took to his Twitter page to discuss the concert's cancellation. Stage collapsed at Lucky Star venue, he tweeted. All crew are safe, but gear damaged. Show canceled. On way there to see for ourselves.
Okay. Is it me, or is Twitter sort of having this, and I'm not bemoaning the state of technology, I'm just saying it is effectively reducing everything to pidgin English. You know, I mean, we're all beginning to speak like Yakov Smirnoff now, where we just drop all the articles and we, you know, on way to hospital, send tweet now, me like Joe.
You know, when you were in elementary school and your teacher made you learn how to write haiku, you thought it would never come in handy. And now you know.
Hey, by the way, I'm going to be the first one right now to start a completely fake internet meme. I tweet. No, tweet coup something. And it'll be a whole thing of Twitter updates that are also haiku. That doesn't really exist, but starting now, we're going to pretend it does, and we'll see how long it takes idiots to repeat it. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Lindsay Lohan's mom, Dina Lohan, labeled her daughter's 90-day jail sentence as, quote, so not fair, unquote. Meanwhile, pictures have made the round showing Lindsay Lohan also had a couple of choice words for the judge. Photos of the actress breaking down in tears when her sentence was delivered also show a multicolored message painted with care on at least one of her fingernails. Scrawled over a pastel background on the starlet's middle finger are the words, F you, made visible clear thanks to photographers' telephoto lenses. The strict jail sentence came as a surprise to Lindsay Lohan, her attorney, and her mother. I'm thinking, I probably wouldn't paint that on my middle finger if I thought I was actually going to be sentenced to jail.
Seriously, you want to talk about a group of women that ought to just have their ovaries welded into a state of inoperability.
This is so not fair to do this to my child, a flabbergasted Dina Lohan told celebrity gossip website Pop Eater shortly after the announcement was made. The other half of the troubled actress's parental unit, Michael Lohan, was concerned for his daughter's health, you know, going on Larry King and weeping.
Seriously, that whole family just ought to be beaten with a chair. Here's Dawn Taylor.
And by the way, if you're interested, there's the close-up photo of her fingernail.
The thing is, she's become so unattractive, I don't even want to violate her in like a grubby kind of way, you know, which is really saying something. I mean, she's not even hot in a trashy way anymore, which I didn't think was possible. All right, well, what are you going to do? All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News Desk. Oh, by the way, don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson, speaking of violating, the Violating Your Ears with Comedy. The Rick Emerson Show will be talking about numerous things today, including but not limited to this. Today's installment of Pop Culture Authority asks the question, what is up with tentacle porn? We will also have today's top five, submitted by listener Jeff in Tualatin. The top five rock and roll screams, top five songs with a rock and roll scream in them. We'll be speaking with Aaron Mesh of Willamette Week later on today, as well as, in addition to that, a whole pile of news. And this, I sort of hinted to you that I had this thing about that, because you were a barista at one point, were you not?
Yes.
I got this fantastic barista thing that somebody sent me. So we'll get to all that coming up later on today at rickemerson.com. This is Dawn Taylor.
Levi Johnston isn't just getting past his differences with Bristol Palin. He's also hoping to make amends with her famous mom. Last year, after Bristol and I broke up, I was unhappy and a little angry, he told People magazine. Unfortunately, against my better judgment, I publicly said things about the Palins that were not completely true. I have already publicly apologized to Todd and Sarah. Since my statements were public, I owe it to the Palins to publicly apologize. Bristol added her own statement Tuesday, saying, part of co-parenting is creating healthy and honest relationships between the parents. Tripp one day needs to know the truth. Their kid's name is Tripp?
Yeah.
With two P's.
Yeah.
And needs to know that even if a mistake is made, the honorable thing to do is own up to it. Johnson and the former vice presidential candidate have been engaged in a war of words, with the 20-year-old accusing Palin of complaining about her job as governor of Alaska and claiming that there was a lot of talk of divorce in the Palin household. Palin, on the other hand, spoke out against the malicious remarks and also ripped Johnson for posing in Playgirl and talking about sex on the Tyra Banks show.
Oh, I never saw the Playgirl thing. We heard that was going to happen, and then it like came and went, and I never saw it. Was he tackle out?
I don't know.
Sorry. Well, I thought you might know these things.
It's not the sort of thing. Even if I was aware that it was happening, I would not have sought that out.
You wouldn't go out of your way
to
anyway. All right.
No, these people just annoy and offend me on every level possible.
It sounds like somebody in this story is afraid that somebody else might have him killed once she becomes president. So that's what that is. That's a little, no, sir, I didn't mean to. No, in no way was I trying to please. No, I have a family. Look at the heart. That is a little preemptive firewall against Sarah Palin having him chopped up into pieces and tossed into the bay somewhere, which she's going to do anyway, by the way, because
yeah.
She's evil. She is like a cephalopod, sort of, sort of spongy. And, I don't know where I'm going with that.
She can open jars with her tentacles.
And strides across the land going... May not actually represent the sound of Sarah Palin. Here's Dawn Taylor.
It's been months since Jennifer Aniston has been spotted with a new love interest, so when she enjoyed dinner out with a mystery man at LA's Sunset Tower Hotel on July 1st, blogs were abuzz. Despite the intense interest, Aniston, 41, was simply dining with an old friend, actor Chris Garten, 42, who is the soon-to-be ex-husband of event planner Joe Garten, a close friend of Courtney Cox and David Arquette.
Can we all just band together and get Jennifer Aniston a husband, just so she will stay out of the news?
Chris and Jennifer have been friends for many years, Aniston's rep told People. She has had dinner with him dozens and dozens of times. The pair arrived and left together, but they're definitely just friends, seconds another source of the romance rumors. This is just silly. This was in the news.
I'm trying to figure out whether I care enough to open my mouth and begin speaking about the Jennifer Aniston thing right now. Ooh, sources point to no. Okay. We may revisit that later. It's not that I don't have thoughts. It's just that it's like when you see something on the other side of the room and you go, it's way over there. I don't want to get up and walk over there to get it. All the thoughts about it, just like, it makes me fatigued even to think about it, because I got lots of observations about that, but I just don't care enough right now. So we'll try it again later on. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
New on television tonight, Mythbusters, Duct Tape, Hour 2.
Is that new?
It is new. Myths about duct tape are challenged.
All right, so is this going to be like that whole duct tape conversation that you and I had?
Sure. They call it duct tape.
Didn't you and I have the whole duct tape?
We did. I don't know if that was on the air, though.
No, it was off the air. And it was the duct tape, as in, that is the brand name that predated duct tape, which was then made to actually piggyback on the success of the brand name, which was waterproof. It was a reference to being waterproof, like water off a duck's back.
And like most people, I always thought that duct tape was just a mispronunciation of duct tape.
But see, maybe it's one of those things where then I thought that I figured out the truth about something, but then in a sort of reverse Philip at the end, the truth is actually also a lie. So now I have to watch it. That's the whole point of that show, I guess.
You're blowing my mind.
I'm just saying, I could never, you could, now you just never know. It's like that whole business that people started getting uppity last year about how you can say myriad of.
Really?
They started.
Yeah, no.
They started. Let's not start it now. I'm just saying, please. This is like the low end thing again. Just it's like a shelf that's way over there that has a jar of eggs in it that I don't really want that badly.
This is like us spending 45 minutes talking about pens.
No.
This could just go off the rails.
I was willing
really
to do that. The myriad thing, I'm not willing to do right now. We can talk about it later on. We'll save grammar. We should make it a rule that grammar discussions and pen discussions are saved for a show that doesn't try. You know, where we're not trying to actually get things done.
Yeah.
Remind me to talk to you about myriad. When I ask you to remind me of things, do you any of that?
Well, the thing is, you tell me to remind you of something, and then you write it down on a pad right in front of you.
Yeah, but I'm
so
just,
I assume.
But that's a lie.
You
I'm
can
not gonna
see it.
Yeah, but I'm
it's
not
right there.
I'm writing it down, but that's not going to help. That's just decorative.
And I'm also never sure exactly when to remind you, because if it doesn't, you know, come up naturally in the conversation, I don't know if I should just jump in. You're talking about, you know, cave dwelling, you know, marmosets.
Maybe
I say, remember that myriad thing?
Maybe you should. Okay, maybe we should do this. Maybe we should later on. Maybe we should be planning these things, you know, off the air and not taking up valuable showtime. Maybe we should come up with some sort of a recurring bit that is things I asked you to remind me of.
Okay.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Also new on television tonight, a new episode of I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant on TLC. In which a woman gets surprising news after undergoing gastric bypass
surgery. Wait, what's the surprising news? I'm just kidding.
Also, after two pregnancy tests reveal negative results, a woman learns the truth behind her strange, unexplained symptoms.
Don't we know the twist ending to all of these stories? What is the big reveal that they're going to have here?
I think for me, I just like the idea that there's a show called I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant. And they've actually created an entire television show around this.
Well, that's what we were saying yesterday. You write down any idea, no matter how absurd, because someday, I remember, and this is one of those things that, it sounds like I'm talking about how prescient I am. But I remember years ago, I can remember this conversation. I file away grudges just by the bushel. Any slight, real or perceived, goes on a list. And all those people are dealt with at some point. But I remember this conversation from when I was in high school, where I was lecturing my friends in a boring, tedious, never-ending monologue, as is my wont, and droning on in a monotone about things that nobody else cared about. But I remember telling my friends, I said, you know what would be a really great idea for a show is a television program where the hero was a serial killer. And then everyone thought it was, they didn't just think it was, they derided me for the idea. And I remember thinking, you bastards, I'll show you someday. I was actually just gonna put them all in. Because I was just gonna put them all in my basement underneath a thick coating of lie. But now I don't have to do it because Dexter exists and you know it came into its own as a living embodiment of that statement that no matter how weird an idea is, society will eventually devolve to the point where it becomes acceptable.
And plus, you were personally vindicated, which is always tasty.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, now I don't have to tie them down to a table and say, see, I was right. All right, here's Don Taylor.
One more new program on TV tonight on BBC America, The Choir, in which choir master Gareth Malone searches for new singing talent in a school in Middlesex, England. His goal is to create a world-class choir in just 9 months that'll compete at the World Choir Games in China.
And when those guys get together, it's a real barn-burning hootenanny of fun is what it is. All right, there you go.
And that's all of your entertainment news for today.
That's almost a cliche of what I imagine the British sit around watching all the time. All right, there you go. There's entertainment news. There you go. Ah, let me hit the post there at the end. Coming up at 1 o'clock, by the way, it's the Rick Emerson the Radio Program, which you can find out more about at rickemerson.com. Today we will ask the magical question, what is up with tentacle porn? That is today. You never get tired of hearing me say that.
I don't.
You should make that my ringtone. Today is that's today's installment of Pop Culture Authority. We'll also talk to Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We have a top five coming up today from listener Jeff in Tualatin. Today's top five is from listener Jeff in Tualatin, and it is top five rock and roll screams.
So I can think of one song in particular that ought to be on there, and I hope it is, because if Jeff actually is one of my Facebook friends, he may have gotten this from a conversation that I was having with someone on Facebook. So I know one song in particular that ought to be on there.
It's entirely possible. We'll also have watches of various varieties. I believe we have a geek watch coming up later on today. And more Lindsay Lohan news. Oh, and I've got a bunch of this. We've got that Ringo Starr stuff to get through, because it's his 70th birthday. So we should do that.
I wrote that down. And
well, we'll do that. Let's do that next hour. We're getting toward the top here. And the worst musical performance I've heard in quite some time. So we'll get to all that. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
You did have a story that I wanted to cover before the end of the show today about kids biting each other.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is another one of those things where the story itself is only moderately amusing. It's entirely amusing to hear the way that the story is conveyed. This is Kira Phillips. Who I should say, in all fairness, I quite like. Kira Phillips is I never know the difference. What is the difference between an anchor and like a journalist and a writer and a reporter and a? I don't know what the difference is. Is an anchor like it just implies that you're reading but you may not be writing it?
Well, the anchor is the main news personality sitting there at the desk. They are the primary one, which is why they're called the anchor.
Is an anchor the same thing as a? No, so I guess an anchor is a newscaster, but a newscaster is not the anchor.
Right.
All right. I guess anchor would be that you are the holding everything together.
And then reporters generally are in the field for TV news.
Okay. Well, I don't know what her involvement with the story is. I think she actually has a correspondent talking about it, and it's fairly long, so we may not get to all of these here. But so this is Kira Phillips from CNN, and it's one of those things. Where I don't know whether do you ever get the sense sometimes that Henry Rollins talked about this, about sitting on a bench, I think, at the airport. He described sitting on a bench at the airport and thinking to himself, God damn, these people are all dumb. No one in this airport knows all the stuff that I know. I am the only one that sees the truth in how the world operates. I alone see the true nature of things. Where you wonder, like, am I the only one who sees what's going on here? And, you know, is everybody else ignorant? Or do they just pretend to be ignorant because they got a job to do and actually being forthright about what they know would get in the way of their job? Which is all by way of saying that about every 9 months, there's some scandalous behavior that kids are allegedly involved in that parents are concerned about. And it's never true. Ever. That is the one unifying trait. It's never, ever true. So if you hear a journalist going, there's a shocking new trend among American teenagers, and it has some parents worried. It's not fake. You can disregard it right there. That is if parents are worried about it and the news is discussing it, that's your big tell that it doesn't actually happen anywhere.
What's always shocking to me is that when we were teenagers, these things happened.
And
we knew they were nonsense. But now we are all ostensibly adults.
Yeah.
And when we see these things
swallowing it whole.
Now we believe that it's true.
So this is, listen to this latest insane gibberish from American parents. And I'm sure this has nothing at all to do with the movie Twilight. So this is Kira Phillips talking. Well, I'll just let her say it. How about that? I'll let her give you the whole.
The phrase, bite me, used to be an insult, but no longer.
Right there. What else do you need to know?
It just makes me tired.
That's the thing. It's like, do you even need to hear the rest of the story after that? And yet you shall.
The phrase, bite me, used to be an insult, but no longer, thanks to Twilight's Robert Pattinson and the crop of other A-list vampires steaming up big screens and small screens alike. Bite me, now a term of endearment for teens in Texas. That's right. They're foregoing the hickeys and sporting bite marks instead.
So I'm just going to stop it right there, because this story goes on for like 4 hours, and I don't even really know what else you need to hear beyond...
The phrase, bite me, used to be an insult, but no longer thanks to Twilight's Robert Pattinson.
So there you go. He's continued to make the world a better place because he's given journalists more things they can just fabricate. I mean, who knows? One of these days I'm going to say that and it's going to turn out that the story in question actually, that, you know, the kids really are huffing feces somewhere. But I'm guessing that's not going to happen. And this is like the... never mind. It's like the, you know, it's like the don't lick those Mickey Mouse stamps. They're covered with acid. Not true. Never true. Never going to be true.
Yeah, I came across one of these just a couple of days ago that there's a trend in Japan that is starting to make its way over here for these contact lenses that are called circle lenses that actually make your eyes look a little bit like an anime character.
Now, is that real?
Yeah, they're contact lenses, and the coloration of the iris goes out further.
Oh, I see.
So it makes the irises of your eyes look larger.
Okay.
And this is a huge like trend among certain kids in like these certain cultural subsections.
I bet I could find porn on the internet right now that had that. Okay, I'm sorry.
But anyway, so apparently there are some kids who are getting them over here. But when this makes its way to, like, Good Morning America or whatever it was, the story is, you know, they have an ophthalmologist in to talk about how kids are getting these cheap knockoff contact lenses on the internet and then sharing them with their friends. And they're going to get bacteria in their eyes and they're all going to go blind.
No one is sharing contact lenses with their friends.
Yeah.
It's not happening. No one does that anywhere.
Plus, I don't think that many kids are actually even wearing the damn anime contact lenses to begin with.
This is the first I've even heard of them. Yeah. Kids don't even like to share straws.
But so. To listen to Good Morning America, apparently this is just rampant in schoolyards everywhere with kids jamming dirty contact lenses into each other's eyes. And they're going to all go blind.
That's what they're doing instead of huffing paint. Is Steve, let's go to your house and swap contacts. It'll be awesome. All right, let's do one more here, and then we'll bring a curtain down on this parade of sorrows.
What seemed like a minor spider bite almost turned deadly for a Port Angeles, Washington plumber. The Peninsula Daily News reports that Port Angeles resident Joel Robertson was working on a plumbing job in May when a tiny spider bit him. A few days later, his leg had swollen to twice its size, then fever set in. Doctors gave him antibiotics, and he improved, but he soon developed a full-body skin rash. One day it would be a little better, and so we would put off going to the doctor for another day, said his wife, Sandy Robertson. The bite had let in methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, commonly known as MRSA. They told me I had to have surgery, that I could die from this, Robertson said. MRSA is a common bacteria. One in six people has it in his or her body. However, if it gets into the bloodstream through a cut or an opening, it's extremely resistant to antibiotics and can be fatal.
Why are you reading this story? Is this just to freak me out?
Yes.
Because mission accomplished. I mean, if that's your goal here, then you've accomplished that with aplomb, and I applaud you.
Apparently, there's only one antibiotic that really works well on MRSA, and that wasn't the one that he was on.
I'm sorry, we've given you the wrong bottle. We had two to choose from, but damned if we didn't miscalculate.
Robertson had to undergo surgery to stave off the damage to his body from the spider bite. Doctors cut a 5-inch long incision to remove infected areas of skin and tissue.
Okay, we're done. We're ending this now. Thanks so much.
That was from a spider bite.
Okay, thanks. Bye now. And there you go, kids. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show begins in mere moments over at rickemerson.com. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer, Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.